L, AM 580 and online at WILL.UIUC.edu. Good afternoon, I'm Celeste Quinn. Listeners, today I welcome your questions for registered dietitian Susan Kundrat. She joins us on the first Monday of the month to talk about diet, nutrition, and exercise. And here we are on the first Monday of December. So I welcome your telephone calls for Susan. If you'd like to talk with her, give us a call. Here are the numbers in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, you can call us toll-free, 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-WILL. Susan Kundrat is a sports and wellness nutritionist and the owner of Nutrition on the Move. She specializes in developing personalized nutrition plans for athletes and the general public. She's an adjunct lecturer with the Food Science and Human Nutrition Department at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, and she's the author of 101 Sports Nutrition Tips, the publisher for that book, Coach's Choice. You'll also find Susan on the web at www.eatandmove.com. Questions about diet, nutrition, and exercise? They are invited. They are welcome this afternoon. 333-9455, 800-222-9455. Good afternoon. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Nice to see you. We already have a listener waiting to talk with you, Susan. So let's go first to a caller in Champaign on line one. Hi.
Hi. My name is Ann Merrill. How are you today?
Fine. You're fine. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for asking. Hello, Ms. Kundrat.
Hi.
My question is, I've gotten so confused with the diet and exercising with all the different types of diets out there. You got your low carb, you got your zone, you got Weight Watchers. You have so many different varieties and ways to lose weight. What is a really good way for somebody who has confused themselves to maybe go back to square one, go back to the basics? What is a good way to start a weight loss program with maybe nutrition and exercise?
Well, your question is a typical one, I would say, because it is very confusing with everything out there and trying to figure out what's going to work and what's not going to work. And, you know, I think a few basic things we know are probably the cornerstones to think about. Generally, if you're consistent with a plan, and if the plan itself works for you, in other words, you're getting enough to eat, you're feeling satisfied, you're getting enough balance, and nutritionally it's pretty sound, and you can be consistent with it, then generally it's going to help you. I mean, it's probably going to work for most people if they can kind of stay with it. The one thing we do know is if the plans tend to be too restrictive, or it's something that in your mind you think, I can do this for 2 or 3 weeks, but boy, I could never do it longer than that, then it's probably not going to work. And so one of the keys is finding a plan that works for you in your lifestyle. And, you know, for some people, they do better with something like Weight Watchers, where they check in every week and they're more accountable. And, you know, it's a plan that they can track pretty easily. And that may work well for them. For other people, you know, it works better to work with a registered dietitian, for example, and get a plan that's real specific to you. You know, works with your lifestyle exactly. And how does it work with the foods you like, you don't like? Are you going to cook? Are you going to go out to eat? And get a plan that's pretty consistent with your lifestyle as well. You know, when we look at what works the best, a lot of it is making sure your calories are 200, 300, 400 calories less than what you need, and also making sure you've got activity as part of the picture. Because certainly we do know that you're gonna lose weight faster, you're gonna be able to get stronger, your body's gonna change if you exercise along with it too. And so that's one thing I always do recommend. Now, you know, in terms of the specific diets that are out there, again, I think it's more related to what is comfortable for you and what we know works. I have kind of a general sense of things that I think are most, you know, helpful for most people, and that is to just look at the portions you're eating, first of all. Really to look at the amounts. We tend to just eat more than we need in terms of size, so that's a good first starter to look at. And then certainly take a look at how your plate's divided. I'm a big believer that if you look at your plate, and you do make sure that you have a quarter protein and a quarter grain or pasta or rice or bread or cereal, you know, some type of food like that, a quarter fruit and a quarter vegetable. And most of the time, at least at lunch and dinner, you're eating that way. Most of us will cut our calories down because we'll eat more fiber, we'll eat more fruits and veggies that will naturally decrease our calories. And, you know, as a good starting mode, you want to take a look, hey, am I active at least 30 minutes a day, preferably more like 60? There was just a review that came out that said that, you know, for general health purposes, we want to be active at least 30 minutes a day. for weight loss, for most of us, it's more like 60 minutes or maybe even 90 minutes a day of activity. So part of that is to, you know, do a checklist on how active you are, as well as, are you getting balance? Are you eating three or four times during the day? And are you trying to make sure that everything's taken in terms of your plan?
Okay, well, thank you. I appreciate your answer.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. You know, it seems to me that by and large, we're creatures of habit.
We are.
So maybe journaling a couple of days just in terms of what you've eaten and what you like to eat and how much.
Right.
And then if you figure out what you're taking in, you've got a better idea, then you know, well, I can cut this out or down.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think that it makes a good point, because we do know if you're just more aware of what you eat. For most of us, we tend to eat less because we become aware of, oh, gosh, I didn't realize I ate all that. Or if you grab a bag of chips and then you watch TV and the chips are gone, you may not really track that in your mind unless you write it down. And for a lot of us, I believe it's also about feeling satisfied and feeling full and knowing that you ate everything. And so I really think it's important to have things in reasonable sized portions. Maybe that means you do bring the bag of chips home and you put them into small bags so that you eat a bag and you've eaten the whole bag and you can know that you finished the bag. And part of that is then you can go on to the next thing once you know you're done eating. And so I think we all have these little things, like you say, that we're used to, or, you know, maybe we need a sweet after a meal, but instead of having two or three mm-hmm. cookies, we can get by with a mint, you know, but it's recognizing that by writing that down and realizing that, gosh, I'm eating a lot of sweets. Or the other thing I think people don't realize is how many calories they take in and what they drink. Maybe it's alcohol, maybe it's pop, maybe it's just too much milk, maybe, you know, it could be a lot of things, a lot of juice. And so that's one thing we certainly look at closely, is where are your calories coming from? Are they calories that are going to satisfy you? There's a book out, author Barbara Rolls, who's from Penn State, who wrote this book, Volumetrics. It's a real, and that might be something mm-hmm. this listener might even want to take a look at, because she's a researcher and has done a lot of work on how foods are satisfying and do they stick with you. And in terms of weight loss, what should your plate really look like? And a lot of that is eating enough volume, eating enough fiber. Eating foods that are actually lower in calorie density or energy density, but you can eat more of them so that you actually do get satisfied. And then that goes back to your habits. Are you going to the store enough? Do you have fruits and vegetables around? Have you tried different things? You know, I have a lot of clients come to me in their 50s and 60s, and they have a whole list of foods they don't like, but really they haven't eaten them for 20 or 30 years. So part of what we do is try new foods, because maybe grapefruit's not so bad now. Or, you know, there are foods that really, our tastes do change.
So
it's having I call it kind of having an open mind in nutrition, you know, trying to see if there are things that might work for you and help you feel satisfied at the same time. You know, the other benefit of just eating better is that we feel better. And so generally, if we eat more balanced, it might help us lose weight. We probably feel better, so we're getting more nutrients. And we're getting more satisfied, and it's just a positive, you know, we feel better about ourselves because we know mm-hmm. we're taking care of ourselves.
Yeah. Well, that makes me think about exercise. And when we use that word, I think maybe we do ourselves a disservice because mm-hmm. it sounds like drudgery.
Right.
But if you talk, you use the word with the caller, activity.
Mm-hmm.
So if you think about going for a stroll.
Right.
If you think about putting some music on and pulling the shades down, dancing
right, exactly.
in the house, there's a lot more fun
mm-hmm.
than, you know, something that is just, you know, frankly, I know that a lot of people really love their treadmills, but to me, that doesn't work for me.
Yeah. You have to find what works for you. And the whole thing we know is you're getting up and you're moving your body. And that might be, I had a client the other day, and one thing we were trying to work in were kind of 2-minute activity sessions where she'd get up at commercials and just move her body and march. She likes to march. So marching at the commercial time and then sitting back down. Well, particularly for somebody with diabetes, which she has, we know that any activity throughout the day is going to kind of change your whole profile of your body's going to start burning a little bit more mm-hmm. energy, and that may help bring down blood sugars. And if we can do that several times during the day, that's really helpful along with what you're doing eating-wise. And so she was just so relieved to find that, well, let's start with this. Let's add 10 minutes of activity, maybe 5 little spurts throughout the day. And certainly then I think it's also important, you know, to work, if you can, to at least have a couple sessions with an exercise physiologist or a personal trainer, somebody certified who can actually help you find things that you might like to do. There might be activities or things that you never did think of that are going to be a benefit, so you could get kind of your own plan to make it look, you know, something that really is doable. But I think any time we move our body at all, it's a benefit. Mm-hmm. It's helpful. And it doesn't have to be, something where we have to go out 40 minutes straight at a time. You know, we just want to get used to moving our body, and then we feel better. And then usually we have more energy and can do more after that.
Yeah. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest today is registered dietitian Susan Kundrat. She joins us on the first Monday of the month to talk about diet, nutrition, and exercise. You can join us this afternoon with a telephone call. We invite your questions about diet, nutrition, and exercise. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. Let's talk with another listener, caller in Piatt County, line 4. Good afternoon.
Oh, hello. I just had a complete blood test and found that I had high cholesterol, which was 210. I was kind of surprised because I'm a vegetarian, and I use pretty much tofu and peanut butter for my protein. I was just wondering, could you give me an overview of some facts about cholesterol? I've never really thought about it before, and are ways to reduce cholesterol, and just really interested, so I'll hang up and listen. Thanks.
Okay.
I think there are a lot of people like yourself who maybe are eating really well. You know, they're eating well to begin with, and then quite surprised to find that their lipids might be a little bit high. And so we look at things, other things perhaps that you can add. And certainly when we talk about this activity and exercise, again, therapeutically, it's such a benefit to be. And that's where we do look at exercise more. Is it enough exercise that is going to give you an aerobic benefit where it might help bring down lipids? So that needs to be part of your, you know, part of what you're looking at changing if you're not already exercising, you know, to the point or being active to the point where it's maybe helping. But I think nutritionally we do look, especially if you're vegetarian, you're probably already eating a lot of vegetables, probably a lot of fruits, a lot of grains. So we look at things like, well, if you're eating a lot of things like bread or rice or potatoes or pasta, could we switch some things in there like beans, for instance? In other words, if you like red beans or black beans or chili beans or refried beans or edamame or something like that, say, well, maybe 2 or 3 times a week I'm going to, instead of having more of a processed grain or even more potatoes, I'm going to switch that to a gummy fiber like beans or barley or oatmeal or things that we know are gummy, and they can actually, in a lot of studies, decrease lipids because they actually bind with some of the bile acids and take them out of your system. So that's one thing I always look at. Can we change some of the grains you're doing so that you get more of these gummy fibers? And the other things we certainly look at too are, you know, things like peanut butter. That's great. It's a good protein source. Sometimes there's benefit if you don't already use more of a natural peanut butter that might be lower in saturated fat or a little bit higher in monounsaturated fat. Switch to that. Maybe we can make sure you have nuts and seeds as well as peanut butter that maybe have a little bit more fiber, because that might help as well. And then looking at other things, certainly in the diet, like stanol and sterol esters, which have been widely studied. These are esters that are found in nature in very small amounts, particularly in vegetables and soybeans and things like that. But we have them now in foods. We have them in things like soy milk and rice milk, and we have them added into orange juice. You find some of the heart-healthy orange juice have these stanol and sterol esters in them. They're in yogurt now, and you certainly see them in things like Benecol and Take Control. So if you're using margarines anyway, you could consider using one of these margarines with these esters. The studies are pretty clear in many people, reduction of 10 to 15%. In your case, you know, in the caller's case, if she thought, well, 15%, which would be great, but maybe with the fibers as well as these esters, 15% reduction is almost 30 points. Well, that would be significant. And so I think the thing we find with diet is you need to be consistent, do things that you can do on a daily or almost daily basis, and look at what you can add as well as cutting down the fat. And of course, then we look at things like cookies and cakes and,
yeah,
you know, other things.
Yeah, you can be a vegetarian and be short on veggies, I
exactly.
guess, and long on the good stuff,
right?
So-called.
Put
that within quotation marks.
Yeah, but that's exactly right, because particularly a lot of the processed foods and sauces and all kinds of things that maybe don't have any meat products in them or maybe no animal products at all can still be very high in saturated fat. And so we take a close look at that as well.
Okay. Let's talk with another listener. Caller on line 1 in Urbana. Hi.
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. This is something I've not been able to find any information on that's really worked. Come fall, my fingernails start to go by the wayside. They don't grow. They just chip and deteriorate, and is there anything I can do to improve my fingernails?
Well, we always hear things about Knox gelatin and things like that, but unfortunately, there's not a lot of good studies to really show that that's going to benefit. However, there are some studies to find that for some people, making sure you're getting a good intake of what we call, you know, the good fats in the diet, more things, let's say, like olive oil or omega-3 fats or even vitamin E, which is a fat-soluble vitamin. For some people, that can affect skin and hair and nails. And I've had a lot of clients who've increased the good fats in their diet, and that's been helpful in these okay. areas. And so that would be something to consider. Again, nuts and seeds and sunflower seeds and things like that. And then making sure your vitamin E is high enough. Vitamin E, I have a lot of questions on vitamin E right now because of some of the more recent studies that have found, well, probably supplementation maybe isn't the best idea.
Yeah, that's what I've heard too.
Right. And so one approach that I take is to make sure you have a multivitamin with 100% vitamin E, which is generally 30 IUs. And then if you're, you know, if you consider adding more, maybe add it in smaller amounts, maybe a 50 or 100 IU supplement, which is much less than the studies that have shown some potential problems. And at the same time, vitamin E can be a big help in these areas. And so that might be something to consider, is to take a look at maybe a much smaller supplement of vitamin E and see if that helps as well. You know, certainly within the guidelines of not too much, but at the same
right.
time, a little bit more might be beneficial as well. You know, and when we look at skin and hair and nails and things, protein is important. It doesn't have to be necessarily in a certain
now,
kind.
What kind, that's what I was going to say. What, I don't eat I am far from being a vegetarian, but I don't eat a lot of meat. But I think I eat plenty for what I need. But maybe I need to, maybe is there another kind of protein that I can eat that is a good protein that isn't necessarily animal protein?
Well, sure. I mean, there are other proteins. For instance, soy proteins. So I had mentioned soybeans or edamame or different beans in general, if you like them, are good sources. And again, nuts and seeds. Nuts and seeds are great in that we have to be careful because they're higher calorie, but yet something like almonds, very high in quality protein, very high in good fat, high in calories too, but a serving about a quarter cup is a reasonable serving where you're going to get protein and those good fats. Or sunflower seeds, or walnuts, or soybeans that are dried, kind of like soy nuts. You know, those are all really reasonable options. And then I think the other thing you can look at is things like egg. Egg is a great protein. You know, the egg protein itself, mm-hmm. most of the protein's in the white, but there's a little bit in the yolk. Vitamin E is in the yolk. So maybe even a couple times a week you scramble two whites with one whole egg, and you have that as breakfast or lunch or dinner as your protein.
Well, I'm not overweight. As a matter of fact, I tend to be a little underweight. So weight's not a problem. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not worried about, you know, being overweight, but I do not want to get the wrong kind of fats into my diet mm-hmm. and run my cholesterol up, which happens to be okay.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't want to, you know, upset the apple cart, but
right.
I would like to improve my fingernails and my hair. And
right.
Yeah. You know, since it's a seasonal thing, and I don't know, it might be a good idea to consult a dermatologist, but
mm-hmm.
What about vitamin D? You're the nutritionist, Susan, but does that play a role? Does that vitamin play a role?
Yeah, well, we typically think of vitamin D with bone, you
right.
know, bone strength and things, but it's related to tissue. And, of course, we don't get much vitamin D in the winter living here, very little at all if you don't have it supplemented. And so that would be something maybe to ask, like you're saying, ask.
Well, I got tested for that about a week ago, and they said my vitamin D is great. So
that's good.
I think I'm going to have to just look at your suggestion about maybe some the nuts and the beans and some of these things that are good fats, but, you know.
Good protein, good fat.
Good proteins,
right.
good fats.
You know, another thing to consider if you like it is avocado, which is a great source of monounsaturated fat, has some vitamin E. And, you know, that's great to have on salads. And, again, in your case where you don't have to necessarily worry about losing weight, or certainly you could gain a little bit of weight, then that's a great place to get some of the good fat as well.
Well, now that's a good idea. I hadn't
Olives.
Thought of.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you so much for the call.
Okay. Good luck.
Thank you.
Next, we talk with a listener in St. Joe on line two. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Susan.
Hello.
Good afternoon, Susan.
Yes. Hi. How you doing?
This is Dale from St. Joe.
Hi,
and,
Dale.
Hi. How you doing? I'm also a vegetarian. You seem to be getting a rash of calls from the...
Oh, I think we lost our caller. The phone cut out there. Maybe he'll call back and we'll try again. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Well, here it is. We're early in December, and the invitations are in the mail to parties and whatnot. Lots of feasting going on ahead of the holidays. What kind of tips can you share with us for, you know, navigating all the festivities, all the goodies that come with the celebrations?
Well, first, I think part of enjoying these festivities is the food, and so we should do that. I don't think we should feel guilty when we go to parties. I think we should really enjoy the food as part of what we're doing. But I think part of it is to just be aware. A lot of it is going into parties, going into different situations, dinners, being aware of how much we are eating. And again, I think really the key is the amount. For example, you know, if you have, let's just say if you have a creamy pasta dish that's real good and you have a half a cup of that, that might be 200 calories. But if you do have a cup and a half, that's 600 calories. I mean, so that's a big jump. And so same thing with sweets, particularly things like fudge and caramels and things that are just really concentrated in calories. One or two pieces of small pieces really is fine. That can fit in. But four or five, that makes it rough. And so the other thing we know about the holidays, or we know in general, is that if food is accessible to us, if it's within reach or if it's out and we see it, we just tend to eat so much more of it. And so that's another thing I think for the holidays for everyone to be aware of, maybe in your offices and where you're working all day too, is maybe to bring things out certain times during the day.
And put them away?
Yeah, not necessarily have them sitting out all the time, because it's very easy to just keep nibbling and nibbling and nibbling if it's around. And so I think there are a couple things you can do. I think if you're invited to a party, you can certainly bring a healthy option, which helps too. I mean, you can, I made, speaking of avocados, for a party not too long ago, I made with low-fat cottage cheese. I blended up low-fat cottage cheese, a whole container, with three avocados, and then just added some cumin to it, added a little bit of spices and some onion powder. And that made a really great dip. And add some lime juice, which made the avocados stay fresh. And so it was, you know, it was definitely kind of a low-fat version. It was real good and felt good because I brought some vitamin E. but you know, there are some good options. So you bring that, and you bring a bunch of veggies and or baked chips or something. And so at least, you know, you're maybe doing your part to bring something that's a little bit healthier. And I think that's something to keep in mind, too. And I think the other thing is when you're going to parties, you know, when you have your plate in your hand, make a mental note to try to fill half of it with fruits and veggies if you can. And usually they are available at most parties. So maybe you do fill half with fresh vegetables and a little bit of dip, and then you get some other things that might be higher calorie. And so you eat a lot, you get satisfied, but the total amount you ate in terms of calories is maybe half of what that plate would have been had you not added the fruits and vegetables to it. And so, again, you enjoy yourself, and but it's not quite so caloric.
Let's talk with another listener, line one. Caller in Champaign, good afternoon.
I have two questions. One was, in Bob Greene's book, he's a, you know, the exercise guru for Oprah. He was, one of the strategies he had was starting an exercise program and for about 3 weeks, and then add the diet component. And the other question I have is, what is the appropriate amount of sodium that you should find in, like, Weight Watchers diets or, you know, Lean Cuisine? Because I know there seems to be a lot of high sodium content in those, and I just wonder what's a good range to take, you know, to use.
Okay. Well, for the first question with Bob Greene's book, and like you say, he has worked with Oprah as her trainer, and I think his – one of the philosophies that he talks about that a lot of people do talk about, and I think is really helpful, is to not try to make too many changes too fast. In other words, maybe you are wanting to start an exercise program and you're wanting to change your diet, make some significant changes in your diet, to not expect too much of yourself at one time. And so perhaps getting on a consistent activity program or consistent exercise program for the first 2 or 3 weeks and then thinking more about diet and how that can affect is certainly a good idea, because you don't want to overwhelm yourself with too much. too much change at one time. As Celeste mentioned earlier, we are creatures of habit, and so making a consistent change might take 3-4 weeks to where you feel, okay, I can do this. I'm kind of in the habit now of doing this, and so then I can add something else to it or make another change. So I think that's definitely helpful. I think the other thing with doing maybe starting some more activity first is that usually that'll give us more energy. We'll feel better. We can feel the change, particularly if we're doing anything that's related to strength. I think that's so important. As a dietitian, I generally, you know, recommend my clients do some kind of strength work because you feel the difference when you're doing strength exercise too. And so after you've done that for 3 or 4 weeks, that's a real positive. And usually when you feel better, you eat better. And so if you know physically you've made those changes, I think it's a lot easier to start incorporating nutrition changes too. So I work a lot with personal trainers, and we often do it that way. One of us will work with a client first for the first 3 or 4 weeks, and then the other one will start on the plan as well. And that tends to be a great way to do it. And it's easier on you. You know, it's easier if you're not so overwhelmed. I think the other thing, or the other question, you know, that you had about sodium is a good question, because a lot of the processed foods that are considered healthy, or maybe healthy meals or quick meals, still do have sodium. I mean, we're going to find it in those meals just because it's processed. And so you look at a Lean Cuisine or Weight Watchers or Healthy Choice meal or something like that, and I think you just know that there's going to be sodium in there. And I think one thing you can look at is to say, well, if it's 400 or 500 milligrams or less, that's great. A lot of them still have 600 or 700, but if you can find something around 500 milligrams, which you can in some cases, that's kind of a good bet. You know, our overall goal for the day for most of us is around 2,000 milligrams a day. And so you might think, well, I have that Healthy Choice meal, but I'm throwing in some baby carrots and an apple, which virtually adds very little sodium, if much at all. And so you're just going to get it in that meal. So that's one thing to consider. Are you having a processed meal with something else that's processed? Then you might be in more trouble. But if you have a processed meal and you add a fruit and vegetable, which don't really add sodium, if they're fresh, then you're in great shape, because then your whole meal is maybe 600 milligrams, and that's certainly within what we're kind of shooting for on that 2,000 milligrams a day.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Good question. How many milligrams of sodium are there in a teaspoon of salt?
About 2,400.
Wow. Okay.
So, yeah, so you can see that if you use a lot of salt, table salt,
it stacks up.
That adds up really fast. And kind of on the flip side, you do have to make sure, as we talk about exercise and being more active, that if you're working out pretty hard, if you start increasing your activity, then you might need to be aware to make sure to take in a little bit more salt, because you might be, if you are a heavy sweater and losing a lot of salt, that's kind of on the other end. But I do have a lot of athletes I work with who cut their salt way down, and then they find they have more trouble with cramping, and they're just trying to eat healthy. But then as you increase workouts.
Find that, right.
Yeah, if you're a heavy sweater. So, but we know, I think we're finding, you know, salt is important, sodium is important, particularly for managing high blood pressure and for disease risk reduction. And at the same time, a lot of people feel that when they cut their salt down and get used to it, food tastes a lot better to them, because mm-hmm. they're actually tasting the food and they're not just tasting the salt.
Yeah. Another question for you in terms of sodium. You know, now we can see some products are labeled low sodium. Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
That means 140 milligrams or less.
Less per serving.
Right. And very low sodium, if you see that, is 40 milligrams or less. Now, you might see things where they say less salt or salt decreased, and that may or may not mean anything depending upon what it originally was in the product. You know, it might say 25% less sodium than the original product, but original product might have had 1,000 milligrams, so it may still be a very high salt product. But if you see the actual word low sodium, the words low sodium together, then you can be quite assured that that's going to be a product that'll, you know, be quite low.
Okay, let's talk with another listener. I think this might be our St. Joseph caller. Hi.
Hello.
You're back?
Yeah, my phone went dead there.
Hi.
Okay. You may have answered part of my question. It was in regard to high pressure or high blood pressure and how we may nutritionally reduce that. Are there any other ways besides reduction of salt that,
that
will help?
That's a good question. I think what we're finding, you know, we certainly have always thought about sodium and salt and decreasing salt. And that's one of the first recommendations you'll get from your physician or dietitian, is to watch your salt intake. But a couple other things have been looked at. Well, a lot of things, actually. But in the last several years, you might have heard about the diet called the DASH diet. And the DASH diet, there were several studies out in Boston primarily, or they coordinated them out there, which were studies that looked at combinations of diets and how can your food combinations really help. And what that DASH diet is, basically, it's a diet that is pretty low in extra sugars, pretty low in extra fat and extra salt, but they bumped up the fruits and bumped up the vegetables and bumped up the calcium. It's got several milk, you know, two or three servings of milk. And the protein is there, but it's not a lot of extra protein. And so on this plan, where what we find is potassium was increased quite a bit, calcium was increased, fiber was increased, and it's still pretty low sodium, that there was even more benefit than just cutting your sodium or cutting your salt. And so certainly some of these other key nutrients like calcium in the diet appears to play a bigger role than we once thought in blood pressure reduction and potassium. And so one thing I look at with clients is how can you boost your potassium, particularly naturally? So maybe you're getting, you know, more foods with high potassium. We always think of bananas and orange juice and things like that. Even meats have a lot of potassium. So if they're leaner meats, that's good. That'll also boost potassium. So particularly, though, we look at adding fruits and vegetables, because that may play a big role in blood pressure as well as just being healthy for the heart. And then the other thing we definitely know makes a difference, and I've seen this a lot with clients, even what we'd call a 5% weight loss drop, which, you know, for somebody looking at 200 pounds, even if they go to 190 pounds, which they may not consider their ideal weight, maybe they still think they need to be 160 or something, but we know that even 5 or 10 pounds of weight loss in most people will drop blood pressure. And so, and you think about it, if you think about a 5-pound bag of flour, and if you think your body's got to push blood through that extra 5 pounds, to me, it makes a lot of sense, you know, when you think that that's just harder on your body, harder on your heart. And so for 5 pounds of weight loss, that's one of my first goals with people. If they really do and can lose some weight and it's not going to be unhealthy for them to go down a little bit, we look at dropping very minimally and see about a, you know, reduction there, because that may have a big benefit when it comes to blood pressure as well.
Well, I thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for the call.
Also, I just wanted to mention here, as I prepared for today's program, some of the things that we might talk about. And I know that we thought, both of us thought of the holidays immediately. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I came across in prep for today's show is that stress actually can play a role in increasing blood pressure and weakening your immune system. And, you know, the holidays can be great fun, and they can also be a pain in the neck.
Right, right.
So you might want to take a look at what you can do to relax and enjoy yourself.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think some of it is we have a lot more expectations, and then sometimes it's a lot more financial expectations with gifts, and you're going places, and then maybe you're getting together with family, and that may or may not be stressful, or yes. It might be good, but it also might be stressful. And so just a lot more going on time-wise and everything. And so I do think it's so important to, you know, at the very least, take a minute or two out of your day, a couple times a day, to just close your eyes, take some deep breaths. We know nothing else, just taking deep breaths and just kind of calms us down is very, very helpful. And like you're saying with immunity too, we know now from a lot of studies that if we are feeling more stressed, if we have a harder time kind of relaxing, then that can affect our immune system too. And so we might be more apt to get sick, and then that adds extra pressure. Mm-hmm. Or if your children are sick, it's extra pressure on trying to coordinate everything, and that does make it more difficult.
So a little time out for a little meditation, maybe a couple of gentle yoga techniques.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And that's where this activity idea comes in. Again, we know for cardiovascular health, we need to go longer periods of time at a higher intensity, but we also know that getting up from your desk, walking around, taking some deep breaths for a minute or two, boy, that's going to get your heart rate up, it's going to get things going, but at the same time, it's going to relax you. We know that exercise and activity in general gives, you know, the sense, gives good hormones, gets them going.
Right.
And so there's a lot of benefit. I think, and what certainly what exercise researchers and exercise physiologists have said forever is there's just, you know, we underestimate the benefit you get from exercise. And I think that's what we're definitely finding is for not only disease reduction and management of disease, if you have high blood pressure, diabetes or whatnot, but just the fact that your body can stay in a healthier state, no matter how much you get, a little bit's going to be helpful.
Yeah. Your endorphins.
Right.
Get a boost.
Exactly.
Okay. Let's talk with another listener, a caller in Oak Forest on line 4. Hi there.
Hi. I had a workman here, and I heard you, so I didn't get to listen very carefully. I heard you talking about vitamin E before. I, for 25 years, took 400 units a day, and plus a multiple vitamin, which had some in it, too. You know, it was always said it was good for you. Now, you know, I probably should drop dead tomorrow. Mm-hmm. But my family doctor said not to discontinue it completely because macular degeneration runs in my family. And I was, but actually, I didn't stop to ask him how many units he would recommend. He just said, keep taking it. And I heard you recommend something, but I didn't catch the amount. I was wondering if you could repeat that.
Mm-hmm. Well, most of the studies that we've had on vitamin E that that might show some potential problems or at least perhaps an increased risk of some disease states were generally 400 to 800 IUs. That's what a lot of these studies, and some even more. And so to me, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, vitamin E does a lot of important things, but we do want to be careful with it. And so even looking at, and you can talk to your doctor specifically, but even 50 or 100 IUs a day is going to be more than we're going to get in food. Most of the time, a multivitamin will have 15 or 30 IUs. And so it's more, and it's still perhaps beneficial, but it's certainly not at that level where we think it might be problematic. I think the thing with vitamin E is when I read reviews from researchers who work with vitamin E, there's still a lot of controversy, and there's still a lot of researchers who have seen such great benefit in their studies that they may not be ready to say don't take it. But I think the general consensus is we used to think it really was preventive and helpful, and we may not be able to say that now because of some of the studies, but there are a lot of good things vitamin E does. And so, you know, my thinking on it is let's move it down a bit, but maybe still, if you feel like you want to still take it, 50 or 100 IUs may still offer some benefit. Mm-hmm. But it's not at those levels that are as high.
What would you think of 200?
Well, or 200's kind of in the middle, too. I mean, I think what you'd want to do and what anybody should probably do, particularly if you're under supervision of a physician for a particular, you know, disease state or for prevention purposes is ask your physician specifically, because everybody's different. So there might be other things that weigh in. You know, vitamin D is also an anticoagulant, and, you know, it's a can serve as a blood thinner. And so sometimes there are other issues related to amounts based upon other things you're taking or other medical concerns.
I thought the vitamin E was an antioxidant. Is it a blood thinner also?
Yes, and certainly, you know, has antioxidant properties as well, but it also can thin the blood, particularly in large amounts. And that's why often if somebody goes in for surgery, they'll say, if you're on vitamin E, discontinue that. If you're on garlic, discontinue that. Mm-hmm. Or anything that might be a blood thinner, they generally want you to discontinue before you go in. Other herbs that could thin the blood, too.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. You're very welcome. Let's talk with another listener. Caller in Sycamore on line one. Hi.
Good afternoon. I'm interested in knowing about the effects of diet on triglycerides and HDL. I have a very good total cholesterol count, around 150, but my triglycerides are quite high. They're about well over 250,
mm-hmm.
and the HDL is quite low. It's down in the 20s. So I'm hoping you might have some thoughts on that. I did take niacin for a while
mm-hmm.
and found that it really didn't have any effect on the HDL at all and only modestly reduced the triglycerides, maybe, I don't know, 5% or
mm-hmm.
just not very impressive for the amount of discomfort you have to go to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I guess if we look at triglycerides first, we have seen in a lot of cases and in a lot of studies where people have gone on very heart-healthy diets, lower-fat diets, decreasing their saturated fat and eating more carbohydrate or particularly more fiber and healthy carbohydrates. And sometimes those triglycerides will actually go up. Maybe your total will go down. Like in your case, your total is a great range. But triglycerides might actually go up or not go down on that type of diet. And so one thing that some researchers have found in some studies is that if you look at adding more good fats, we talked earlier about nuts and seeds and olive oil and avocados and things like that, fish oil, that in some cases that'll help bring down triglycerides. And maybe you're cutting your carbohydrates down a bit, not to be a low-carb diet, but maybe just eating a little bit less carbohydrate and breads and pastas and rice and fruits and veggies maybe, and then you're increasing good fats. And so you might eat more nuts, you might eat more seeds, might eat more, again, use more olive oil, use more oil and vinaigrette dressing. So it's not adding saturated fat, but it's adding more good fat. And in some studies with HDL, that's been a benefit too. That's been one thing that has shown in some instances to increase HDL. HDL doesn't move very well. It doesn't move very fast for most of us, so that's a little bit tougher to deal with. But we do look at saying, yeah, decrease carbohydrates, add some more good fat, watch your sugar intake. If you drink much alcohol, maybe decrease that. The alcohol is a tricky thing because more alcohol can increase triglycerides, but a drink or two a day in a lot of studies also increases HDL. And so that makes it a bit tricky with alcohol too. But one thing we look at is definitely more good fats, maybe less carbohydrate, and seeing if that can shift in how your lipids look with that as well.
Okay, what about exercise for HDL?
Well, certainly exercise is one of those things that can help HDL move. And so one thing, I think it'd be really helpful with HDL in the 20s, which is quite low, that you'd want to be on a real, you know, if you can get on a real set exercise program, again, working with a certified trainer or someone who, exercise physiologist, who could really get you a set plan that might help therapeutically move those up, that's great. Aerobic exercise is what we're really looking for that can be a benefit. And the other thing, if someone does smoke, then we really encourage them to stop smoking for general health anyway. But sometimes when someone stops smoking, that can boost HDLs too if they are a smoker. That's one thing we see sometimes go up when they stop smoking.
That's interesting. But unfortunately, I don't smoke or drink, so
yeah.
Those are out.
Yeah.
Well, maybe that's not unfortunate.
Yeah,
you're
that probably
in
helps
fine
you.
Shape.
But the other thing to look at, too, is just omega-3 fatty acids. I don't know if you supplement now with omega-3 fats as a supplementation, but check with your physician about that because we do have some studies that have shown real benefit with omega-3 fats in supplemented form to decrease triglycerides as well.
Very good. Well, okay. Thank you very much.
Next, we're going to squeeze one more caller in here this afternoon before we wrap things up. Line 2, listener in Urbana. Hi.
Good afternoon. Hello.
Hi.
I wonder, what do you think about this soy cream for somebody that has high blood pressure and cholesterol?
The soy cream?
Uh-huh.
I don't know too much about a soy cream that you would actually rub on your body.
No, that is soy cream in the place of ice cream.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Oh, okay.
Soy ice cream. Yeah, like a soy dream or something like that. Those can be really good because some of the, you know, ice cream in general, if you eat real ice cream, very high in saturated fat. That's partly why it tastes so good. And so some of the soy versions or even using ice milk, if you like that versus ice cream, really drops that saturated fat.
What do you mean by there is an ice milk?
Mm-hmm, there's ice milk that is made from milk rather than cream.
Oh, I see.
And so the fat content is way low. The main thing to look at if you have sherbet or ice milk or some of the soy ice creams is really the total amount of fat and then the total amount of saturated fat. And so the lower the better when it comes to the fat in those ice cream-like products. But, yeah, that's a really good suggestion because some of those soy ice cream-type products are really, really good options.
Okay, you said that I can use ice milk, you said?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, ice milk. There are products out there that just say ice milk right next to the ice cream, or they'll say low-fat ice cream or fat-free ice cream, or there are also products. There's a product that I tend to like called Skinny Cows. I don't know if anybody's tried those, but they're an ice cream sandwich, but they're made more out of ice milk, and so they're much lower in saturated fat but still taste good. And so there are a lot of things out there that don't have all the fat that can be a real benefit.
I didn't know about the other things. I just knew about this soy cream that I bought and, you know, once or twice in a week, maybe just a tablespoon or less than that I have been using.
Yeah, it's nice to have something sweet that's a good option that is also going to be healthy for you.
Thanks a lot. Thank
you. Thanks for the call. Before we wrap up here, can you give us a good idea of what a serving of good fat, one serving of good fat might be? We've mentioned nuts, olive oil, avocado. Give us a sense of what that looks like.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to overdo it.
Right. Well, if you look at about something that would be roughly, let's say, about 150 calories, we'll use that as kind of a serving. That's about a tablespoon of oil. So if you use a tablespoon of oil in dressing, let's say, or maybe even you use a couple teaspoons and a couple teaspoons of vinegar together, that would be a reasonable amount. And when we look at nuts, really for the benefit of nuts, most the studies are a quarter cup to about a third cup. Now, a quarter cup is around 200 calories or so. So that's kind of what I use as a general guide. That's 4 tablespoons of nuts. And that would give you, in terms of fat, that would certainly give you a good serving of fat and also a good serving of protein. Same thing with an avocado. Even half of an avocado is a good amount to use because that's going to give you a decent amount of vitamin E and fat, but it's not going to give you so much fat like a whole avocado would. So those would be good options for amounts.
Yeah. It's really useful to know what it looks like,
mm-hmm.
you know, or how much. You
right.
know, whether it's the deck of cards thing or the fist or
right.
a quarter cup. That is really helpful to visualize it. Susan, we're out of time. Thank you so much. We're going to see you in January, mm-hmm. but not on the 3rd, I don't think. I think we're going to see you the 2nd Monday.
That'll work
in
great.
January. Okay. Susan Kundra, sports and wellness nutritionist and the owner of Nutrition on the Move. You'll find her at www.eatandmove. That's eatandmove.com.
Programming on WILL is made possible in part by Strawberry Fields on West Springfield Avenue in downtown Urbana. Strawberry Fields has an in-store nutritionist, provides a wide assortment of natural foods, vitamins, and supplements, as well as a full deli, coffee bar, bulk herbs, fresh breads, and produce.
Let's find out now what happened today on the Chicago Board of Trade. Here with the numbers, Todd Gleason.
Thanks much. The last from the Chicago Board of Trade this afternoon. Futures rallied just a bit. Dave Dickey tells me that's because the funds, at least as he sees it and as has been reported on many of the reporting sites, have been into the marketplace, and they managed to rally the beans by the end of the day, up 10.5 cents in the nearby January contract. They settled at 575.5 on their high, their low at 563.5, and the settlement price there at 573.25. So they settled pretty close to that high. We'll take a complete look at those numbers in just a minute from the bean pit, but we'll start in the soft red winter wheat pit at the Chicago Board of Trade, where we always do. December contract at 367. Final trade for the day was up a penny, had a high of 370.5, a low at 366.5. That Dease contract for the soft red winter wheat settled at $3.67.5, or rather 367 even. They were up 1 cent for the day. July futures, 359.75, the high, low at 355, settlement price at 355 even, unchanged. December corn now, 308.5, the high, the low at 303. The settlement price up a penny at 304.5, up primarily in concert with what was happening in the bean pit for the day. The March contract at 324.5, the high, the low at 318, settlement price at 320.25. They were up a half. And the May futures, 334, the high, the low at 328. Settlement price at 329.5, up 3/4. And July wheat at the Chicago Board of Trade, 343, the high, the low at 336.5. Settlement price at 338.5, up 1.25. September futures at 349.5, high, low at 345.75. And September wheat at 347, up 1.5 for the day. Now the corn pit, December contract, 194.75, the high, the low at 189.5. Settlement price at $1.93.5. They are up 3.75. March futures, 208.25, the high, low at 203.25. Settlement price at 206.75, up 3.5 cents. May futures, 217, the high, low at 212. Settlement price at 215.5, up 3.75. July contract in the corn pit, 225, the high, the low at 220. Settlement price at 223.75. They were up 3.75. And the September futures, 233, the high, low at 229.25, settlement price at 231.75, up 3.75. December contract at 245, high, low at 239, settlement price at $2.42.75. They were up 3.75. I'll bet those of you who were paying attention caught the fact that I was reading some corn numbers when they were actually wheat numbers early on. That's because there are a couple of new contracts that I did not have in the settlement prices last week that Dave Dickey managed to add and not tell me that he was putting in from the Kansas City Board of Trade. I'm only making fun of Dave because he's sitting next to me at the moment. So those first two contracts, December and July, were from Kansas City. The rest of them, which I started out with the corn, were actually from the Chicago Board of Trade. Now, December oats at the board, 211 the high, the low at 207, settlement price 210. They were up 6 for the day. The March futures, 196 high, low at 191.25, settlement price at 195.75. They were up a nickel for the day. Soy complex, 10.5 cents higher for the nearby January contract, a high of 575.5, the low at 563.5, settlement price at 573.25. They were up 10.25 for the day. The March contract at 580.75 high, low at 571. Settlement price at 579.5, up 9 cents in the May futures. 584.75 the high, the low at 576.5. settled at 583.5, up 8.75. July contract in the corn pit, 589.5 the high, the low at 82. Settlement price at $5.88, up 8.25 cents. In the August soybeans, 591.5 the high, the low at 85.5. A settlement price at $5.19 for the August beans, up 9.25. September futures up 8.5 cents today, 591 the high, the low at 87. Settlement price there at 590.5, up 8.5 for the SEP contract. And next year's November beans, 594.5 the high, the low at 588.5. The 2006 bean contract settled the nose at 593.75. They were up 6.75 for the day. Bean meal futures December contract 177 the high, the low at 172.70. Settlement price at 175.60. They were up 1.80. January contract at 176.80 high, low at 172.60. Settled at 175.40, up 170. And December bean oil now, 21.75 the high, the low at 21.30. Settlement price at 21.66. They were up 37. And the January oil, 22.02 the high, the low at 21.65. Settlement price at 21.91. And they were up 35 for the day. Now with the numbers from the Mercantile Exchange, here's Celeste Quinn.
Okay, Todd. Cattle finished lower today, while lean hogs and February bellies finished on the upside. January feeder cattle 116.97.5 the high, the low 116.20, the settlement 116.37.5, that down 30. March 115.32.5, the high 114.60, the low 114.92.5, the settlement, that down 7.5. April feeder cattle 113.40, the high, the low 112.80, the settlement 113.10, that down 12.5. December live cattle 93.32.5, the high 92.75, the low 92.85, the settlement, that down 17.5. February 96.25, the high 95.55, the low 95.75, the settlement, that down 7.5. December lean hog 63.05, the high 62.50, the low 63 even, the settlement, that up 20. February 66.52.5, the high 65.75, the low 66.32.5, the settlement, that finishing up 10 cents. April lean hogs 69.40, the high 68.45, the low, finishing at 69.30, that up 40. May 70.70, the high 69.70, the low 70.70, the settlement, that up 47.5. February pork bellies 89.55, the high 88.35, the low. And February bellies finished the day today at 89.02.5, that up 25 cents. The Dow is down 49 points at 10,829. The NASDAQ off 17 at 2257. The S&P 500 off 4 points at 1261.
The Carle Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carle Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
You're tuned to the Afternoon Magazine on WILL Urbana, the broadcasting service of the College of Communications at the University of Illinois. It's